Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, radio listeners. I'm so glad to be on the air with you. If you had a chance to look on the marquee, today's topic is a little different from what I've been following several weeks earlier. I've been away, so I haven't talked to you in about 3 weeks. And the series that we were following prior to my leaving was social justice / social injustice. Today, I want to talk with you about, is American food safe for consumers? I teach a course, and it's human biology and nutrition. And in that class, I've been really working hard to empower my students. And the empowerment that I'm trying to give them is to question whether or not what they're eating is safe, if it really is nutritious, and what can they do to affect improving the nutritious value. And what I've learned, because I've learned an awful lot this semester, is that many of this generation, and I'm saying someone 30 years old and younger, have not really interacted with their food on any level. They've grown up in an environment of fast food. They've had information provided by computer, by television, by radio, by word of mouth, by in-school vending machines. And consequently, the information, which would be very apparent as far as someone who have been on a farm or who has interacted with their food in some level, and consequently, there is a void. I don't think many of the young people really know what it is to start from scratch. When I talk about the killing of an animal to provide meat, there's reaction. It's almost visceral, where they think killing an animal is awful stuff. But then they will flip that to go to a McDonald's or a KFC or any of the big food chain and have no hesitation to actually order some meat product. So part of what I do a lot is introduce what is processing, what is food handling, what is the difference between the food groups and the nutrition for good health, what is food science as opposed to grocery buying and cooking. What I covered most recently had to do with how in the United States, and I make the distinction because I currently am aware by way of Facebook of a nephew traveling through Europe at this time, and in his reports I'm always amused and also delighted to find that he's discovering the bigger world. And the comment that I found most interesting was his comment that here, and I think at the time he was in either Denmark or Germany, they do not allow genetically modified foods. For those of you unfamiliar with the term GMO, genetically modified organism, in the United States of America, we, the citizens, are consuming unknown amounts of genetically modified food. In 1994, a bill was passed saying that a farmer could not disclose whether or not his cows were getting genetically modified hormone injections. There have been all kinds of legislation to protect the manufacturer, not the consumer, from knowing whether or not there has been a genetic modification on their food. Now, you may ask why, you know, if you say animal husbandry and farming has always been man's manipulation of Mother Nature's grasses and other seeds, this takes another step that has been for probably 20, maybe 30 years, and that can shock some of you, but 1980s to 1990s, this is very rapidly developing, and I assure you over the last 20 years, it has not slowed down. The initial motivation perhaps has a very good moralistic point of view, but the outcome, like most applied situations, gets clouded along the way, and the ideal versus reality are very different. Genetic modification allows a person to grow a product and they can engineer the ability of that product to resist, let's say, pesticides. So if you plant a garden of that particular plant, and here comes the pests, bees or ants or mice or whatever, they can then use the pesticide to kill very preferentially the invader or the unwanted. And because they have genetically modified the product desired, it's resistant to whatever the harshness is that's being perpetrated against the invaders. Well, if you're a Star Wars fan or you're someone who likes that kind of scientific concept, you would be rallying and cheering in the stands. But as a consumer, I'm not so excited because my first question is, does the resistance do more than simply allow that plant to live in the face of toxic levels of pesticides? Does that plant incorporate any of the pesticides into its growing? Does the food now have a higher content of some undesirable agent that I will end up consuming? Because the plant could live through this harshness does not mean the plant does not become part of the harshness. If you, you know, it's sort of biblical and they say live in this world but don't be of the world. What I'm presenting today has to do with a little bit of that. I'll skip over the initial and go to the latter part of the marquee. I talk about rice cereal for babies. That there was, earlier this month, April 2016, a sampling data revelation that half of over 76 products that were sampled for rice, when I was young, it was called Pablum. It's just the rice that has now been powdered and put into a very easily dissolvable form. And in the United States, it's a constant thing. Pediatricians will tell mothers, if you have a fussy baby that's 3 months or older, you can add a teaspoon of this to 4 ounces of milk, and that will help the baby not be so fussy and feel less hungry, blah, blah, blah. And it also boosts Gerber and other food industries' bottom line. Unfortunately, in this process of commercialism and high dollar and so forth, it's been shown that these rice products have a high level of arsenic. Yeah, you heard me, arsenic. No one would ever argue that arsenic is a poison. If you read any kind of old world mystery novels and someone is dying and you smell their breath and it smells of almonds, it must be arsenic. Well, I'm talking about that same poison that Agatha Christie made her fortune writing about in her novels are being found in baby cereal. Yep, baby cereal. And why is that such a horrible thing? Well, to me, I say this in my class, and I've had to explain it a couple of times, and I dare say that more than half of them could probably do it for me at this point. When a child is born, I guess in any mammal, there is a kind of fragility, especially in that first month. In a human baby, the skull is not formed. There's more cartilage than bone, and we even talk about a soft spot, and we monitor that soft spot, and we may look at a sunken soft spot or palpitations to gauge the health of that baby. Well, during that vulnerable period, things we expose that child to is probably 100 times more harmful than if you and I were exposed, because the child has an incomplete immune system. Their blood takes everything and washes it over everything. They only have a liter and a half of blood in a baby's body. They weigh anywhere from 8 to 15 pounds. So that there is no what we call blood-brain barrier. And you and I have meninges and other kind of safeguards that come into play right after late adolescence from about age 16 onward that protects the spinal fluid, cerebral spinal fluid, from being exposed to some of the things that might be in your blood or in your lymph fluid. In a baby, that's not true. So that's why it's critical what the baby eats, what you put on the baby's skin, and so forth. So if a child in that very vulnerable state is being fed arsenic, there's no criminology in that? Of course there is. But if you don't know, how do you not commit that crime? In the article, I tell you that 100 parts per billion is what the Food Drug Administration, known as the FDA, says should be the maximum amount of inorganic arsenic permitted. And you would say, well, who's putting the arsenic in the cereal to start with? Well, you have to go all the way back to me and the farming concept. Rice is a very absorbent grass, because rice is a grass, and it grows. If those of you who know in Louisiana and some other places that grow rice, there is constant water in the rice paddy. The way in which rice grows, it requires a lot of water. And this particular plant stores minerals, which you would consider metallics to be, in the seed, which is the rice itself. So if you are treating that rice field with a pesticide that contains arsenic, let's say you're doing it to keep the rats out or killing off the rats or keeping some kind of a beetle or locust from your crop, this plant, though it will grow and look healthy, will also absorb this pesticide, this toxin. And when the product is now manufactured into baby food, rice powder, and you, this loving parent, feeding your child, you may very well be poisoning and curtailing your child's ability. It's known that arsenic is a toxin, and it can reduce birth weight in a child. It can even cause miscarriages for a pregnant woman. It can cause retardation in children, all kinds of bone problems and teeth problems, and some problems we may not have well characterized. And yet, there's no alarm bell sounded. There's, there's no kind of fanfare. It's a casual bit of information, a little esoteric. If you follow an MSN News or Fox News, or maybe there's a little blurt here and there in something called a medical moment. And we Americans go along like no big deal. There's no uproar. There's no horror. And then we wonder, gee whiz, my child has asthma and skin rashes and just didn't do well in school. And all my children have ADHD and we're giving them Ritalin and Adderall. If we take a step back and look, America, parents are no longer in control of raising their children. Parents are no longer in control of feeding their children. And we are zombie-like in our following of whatever TV tells us, of whatever popular mechanisms are, that we see no problem if a child is spending 8 to 12 hours on an electronic device that just became popular in the last 10 years. Question the consumption of bright red, yellow, and blue colored foods. And when I say that, I laugh. I remember clearly when I was in Colorado as a young man, I was very close to the family. I was considered what they call the second adult. The husband was in law enforcement. The wife was a career woman. And every now and then it would be a situation where the two boys would have simultaneous activities and one of the parents were not available and I would be that second adult. And to repay me for being particularly available and supportive of the son that had most hijinks in the family, he stated he wanted to be my host to a amusement park engaged with the family had invited me. So he is my 9-year-old host. Was thinking that he was giving me the world when he purchased what we call a funnel cake. I don't know if everyone out knows what that is. That's a deep fried crispy, and just imagine a donut 5 times as big as a regular donut with powdered sugar on it. And he bought something called bubblegum flavored icy or some kind of a drink. To me, it was the sweetest, vilest liquid I've ever been given a straw. I think I may have a caller. Let's see if they want to join us. Good afternoon, caller.
Hi, how you doing, Dr. Bowles?
Hello.
Brian calling.
Yes, how are
you? How
you
doing,
Doctor?
I'm doing all right. I'm out here with my little boy's karate class.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't know what the topic was going to be today. I'm just calling in to see what the subject was going to be about.
Well, I'm talking about something that you've heard a lot of what I talk about, American food safe. And for the last few minutes, I've been sharing with – I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am, I can hear you. You said American what now?
Is American food safe for the consumer? And
oh,
what
is
I've
American
shared –
American food safe for the consumer, okay.
Yes, is that the newest information for earlier this month in April has been that the rice cereal that a lot of parents feed their newborn has arsenic in it. And I was explaining to my listeners, yes, that arsenic we all accept as a toxin, a poison, and the way in which
right.
it gets in there is pretty much like what I've explained in class, that they've genetically modified the seed, which is rice, and it allows them to use high levels of pesticides to kill the rats and whatever else might eat the rice. But no one stopped to say, how does the rice get changed? And what they found is during the growth period, the rice absorbs the pesticides. And consequently,
wow.
now when they harvest this wonderful crop of unmutilated, aggressively attacked rice, they found that there's more than 100 parts per billion of arsenic in the rice. And the saddest part of that discovery is who consumes that particular type of rice are newborn babies. Because many pediatricians,
exactly,
after about 2 weeks, yes, they will tell a mother she can put a teaspoon of rice powder in her formula for every 4 ounces if her baby has reflux or spits up a lot or is just hungry all the time. And no one has ever
okay.
done any studies to say, what is it doing to the baby? And what I had just said as you called in, look how many young people now have autism. How many of them have attention deficit disorder? How many have
exactly.
asthma? How many have psoriasis? But even with that, there's not an outcry in America. There is no
right,
protest.
Right, because I had taken notice into that myself, that, you know, the higher numbers today of children that have this ADHD. And, you know, this is
yeah.
something that we hadn't seen in the past. So evidently, this
exactly.
that it's probably many different factors that contribute to that. But not to take that into consideration about the arsenic, because I was going to ask you know, what was the long-term effect? And even in small doses like that, what would be the long-term effect on these babies? But you answered the question already.
Well, it is compounded because it's not like we start feeding children powdered rice. We may give them boiled rice at age 2, but I'm talking 2 weeks
right.
old or 4 weeks old. And these are children
mm-hmm.
with 1.5 liters of blood and no blood-brain barrier. So to answer your question,
right.
well, how does it affect the children? We are a living experiment. We have
right.
no predictor because no one stopped to ask the question before they committed the act. And that's really my, when I say I don't want to be political, my biggest objection to a lot of what goes on in America is when they say freedom of speech and my right, but it's a big experiment. I mean, look at cigarette smoking. I use that example for what, 60 years the U.S. government gave it to our soldiers. TV commercials told it was wonderful. And then, boom, 40 years ago or 30 years ago, they started saying this
cancer.
Is what causes lung cancer. So we
exactly.
were a giant experiment for what, 30 years, 40 years? And the irony, here's the part that really gets me. If you look at the Native people, Native Americans used tobacco, but nothing like what our commercialization did. I mean, tobacco was a traditional thing. It was a treaty agreement. It's kind of like our Thanksgiving
right.
or Christmas dinner. But when we introduced it, we put
from
on.
From the ground.
Yes.
There's a problem.
When
that's
we got
natural.
Involved.
You know, they add all these additives to it.
Absolutely. 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 We put on menthol filters and gave you 21 to a pack. You know, many people stop thinking about how much are they smoking. They'd say a pack a day. It wasn't I smoke
right.
a cigarette or it's a pack a day. Then
okay.
we were selling it in a carton. You could get 10 to a carton for $3. So it's not so much what, and I say this in class, what is good or bad. It's how it's processed and how it's consumed. And if we don't stop to talk about it, if someone isn't asking a question, if you change it like that, what's going to be the outcome? And now that I do have your attention, I was going to step to another topic when we said how safe. I haven't introduced this in class, but foodborne illnesses, and this may be some facts you don't know, roughly 5,000 people every year get sick from foodborne illnesses, and that means from buffets and breakfasts and restaurants. 300,000 are severe enough in their illness to be hospitalized. And the Center for Disease Control, they're obligated to keep up track. Now, this is the part that's kind of amusing for me. The first thing is laws that govern how we handle food have not been modified since the 1900s. I didn't say 1990s. I mean 1900s. Now, why is that frightening?
Over 100 years.
That's right. In the last 100 years, there used to be a farmer might have chicken, and he'd have 100 chicken on his yard. Now, if you talk about a chicken farm, you're talking probably 5,000 chicken in one yard. So the sanitary conditions, the handling, I heard somebody was telling me how they killed chicken in the farms here in Louisiana, and I was just mesmerized. She says they have some kind of thing where it puts the loop around the chicken's foot, hangs it upside down, dips the head of the chicken in water, and they get electrocuted. They send a current through the water to electrocute the chicken's head. I mean, I can't even imagine it. And those of us who think of Popeyes and Church's Chicken and KFC, we don't want to know the gruesome detail. You know, we don't want to know the point where the chicken is alive and functioning and one of Mother Earth's creatures. All we want to know is, it, you know, extra crispy, extra spicy.
Right.
Well, the biggest problem, and this was probably about 5 years ago, had to do with eggs.
Okay.
I don't know, have you ever heard that eggs are also a risk for salmonella?
No,
did you know that? Oh, wow, in 2011, they had some like 50,000 people got sick at different restaurants of eating omelets or, as you may or may not know, mayonnaise. You don't cook an egg. You simply whip the yellow of the egg and add oil. Certain salad dressings, you use raw eggs. A number of fancy dishes start out with just the yellow of an egg. Well, if the chicken is farm-fed and free-range, as we call it, it's no big deal. But when you have 1,000 or 5,000 chickens in one area, the chance of developing viral infection, bacteria infection, and this is a part that's really horrifying, rats eat eggs. And if you're not really diligent in keeping your coop clean, because I don't know if you've ever been to a chicken coop, it stinks. And birds droppings are horrible. You will get a rat infestation because they come in and they steal eggs and interact with the chicken droppings and so forth. And rats carry salmonella. Well, here's the part that when I read it, I said, oh, my goodness. April 2016, there was a study done of several farms for eggs. So when you start thinking about it, you ask somebody to scramble eggs or do eggs soft or over easy. They discovered that in the highly packed chicken coops and chicken farm, some chicken have salmonella as just part of their normal body, the chicken itself. Everybody knows chicken can have salmonella. But what they didn't know is the chicken would lay an egg that also had salmonella. In other words, the chicken was a carrier. And for people who eat soft-boiled eggs, eggs over easy, they are at risk for salmonella enteritis. Now, I don't know if you're aware of it, but in the 1900s, there was a woman who was arrested and locked up because she was a carrier for typhoid fever. And typhi is a form of salmonella. She worked with food, and they could track how many people she had infected because of her infection. Well, this showed that there are chickens that carry salmonella and pass it on inside of the egg. So restaurants who were serving soft scrambled eggs or eggs over easy were in fact poisoning people or infecting people with salmonella. Now, salmonella can be fatal. Anybody who has ulcer or is on chemotherapy and other kinds of treatment, they can die from a salmonella. Even sickle cell anemia can have a very fatal consequence from salmonella. And what they were saying is overcrowdedness is a contributor to this kind of condition. So if you don't have someone monitoring chicken farms, particularly egg-laying farms, you can be generating a toxin against the people eating eggs. And eggs is one, as you know, one of the less expensive foods in America. There's a few things you can get 12 of for under $3.
See, you know, I was always under the impression, right, when you're talking about businesses that produce, you know, large quantities of these different eggs and egg products, that they're inside of, like, these enormous plants that's very sterilized and, you know, machines is doing everything, machines doing all the packing. That's, I was under the impression of that.
Well, see, America does a good job of making us believe in them. You know, you want to believe that the kitchen that your food comes out of is clean. And when you say, you look, well, I always do it. If you walk in a restaurant, they should have posted what is called a sanitation report. Have you seen it before?
Okay.
Next time you go to IHOP.
Go ahead.
Okay, when you're paying for your food at IHOP, look behind the cashier's head. They must post it in a public place. And it tells you the grade they got. Every restaurant in the United States has to show their grade. And when I come in, if the grade is less than 97, I turn around and leave, because here's how they lose points. If an FDA inspector comes in and they see ants or any kind of crawly in the kitchen, they lose a point, because ants or cockroaches or whatever can walk across a surface and contaminate. And, you know, at my house, you wash the counters with a solution before you start to roll your dough or make biscuits. But in some places, they may not be that diligent. So if you have insects, you have possible contamination. They also open drawers, and if they see any signs of anything, mouse droppings or spider webs or accumulation of oil, they will drop the score. And the law requires every public restaurant to display their grade. So you should be, I mean, it's funny, I walk in looking for that. When I see 95%, it's 95, I don't like 95, or if it says 97, then I'll say, how did you lose points on your FDA rating? Or people who say 100%, they're very proud of that. I don't know if you've ever watched TV where they have this guy come in and inspect kitchens and start talking about oil accumulation and when's the last time you did this or that. That kind of inspection is supposed to be done in every restaurant in the United States. But here's what unfortunately happens. Some people will bribe the inspector. So they will tell the inspector, don't take the points off for that. I'll fix it within the next few weeks. And if you have a, you know, big enough, deep enough pockets and a crooked enough inspector, they will allow certain things to be excused, and you won't know about it until someone gets sick. So
that probably explains
is,
a lot. That explains how so many restaurants that I've went to right here, and these restaurants were, I'm talking about everything you just described, they got it. They got the roaches in there. They got everything in there. And these restaurants have been open for 25 years. And I wanted to say, wow, how are they still open?
Yes.
But I see why. You know, they're bribing the health inspectors.
Yes. Well, I mean, I've gone, unfortunately.
If they have a rating of less than 90, they're supposed to be closed. If they have a rating lower than 85,
well,
they're supposed
now,
to be closed down,
the
right?
Thing. Now we're coming back to the American freedom. Their argument would be, if you see the score and you want to eat anyway, you're eating at your own risk. And there would be people who would argue that. Yes, sir. I'm not kidding. So that's why I come back to the topic, is American food safe? That we have been bold into believing that if it's in America, we got spick and span stainless steel counters and people wash their hands and everybody's certified. But if you take some time, and I invite you to do it, and maybe I'll bring this up in class as a challenge, and look at what the inspection score, and they must post it, and it's usually near the cash register or the entryway of the restaurant. Okay, I thank you for calling in. I just noticed that we've just gotten out of time. I thank my radio listeners.
Okay.
I hope you learned something. And if you have any confidence, any comments, feel free to make them on the website of Radio Blog Talk. And with that, I say be safe, and until next time, bye now.
All right, Doctor.